Yuki half helped, half dragged Brian to the door. "Come on, Brian, try to walk."
"Sorry," Brian said. "Man, I hurt all over."
"You sure you don't want me to call an ambulance?"
Brian shook his head.
"Just sick as all."
He dug into his pocket for his keys, tried to unlock the door with a shaking hand. Pookie had to take the keys and do it for him.
"Just sick,"
Brian repeated as they stepped inside.
"Feel like the inside of a donkey's butthole."
"Live donkey or dead donkey?"
"Dead."
"Ah, yes," Pookie said. "I hate that feeling."
"Tell me about it." "Let me go. Going to bed."
Pookie slowly released his hold on Brian. Brian made it 3 steps before he stumbled over one of the dozens of unpacked boxes cluttering the small hallway. Pookie stepped in quick and slid under Brian's shoulder, stabilizing him.
"Wow, Brian, unpack much?"
"I'm getting to it."
Pookie helped Brian around the boxes and into the small bedroom. It had to be a little bit of a shock to move from Robin's spacious 2-bedroom apartment to this tiny 1-bedroom affair. But 6 months on and he still hadn't fully settled in? Brian had set up the TV and the couch, hung up his all-black wardrobe, and that was apparently all the guy needed. Pookie gently hip-tossed Brian into the bed. Brian opened one puffy, bloodshot eye.
"You gonna undress me, Daddy?"
"Don't think so, fag."
"Homophobe."
"And proud of it," Pookie said. "Bible's pretty clear on that one, big guy." "I'm whipped, brother. So either you get naked on your own or you sleep in your clothes."
Brian didn't answer. Just like that, he'd already fallen asleep. Pookie felt sweat cooling on his forehead. He wiped the sweat away with his hand, then wiped his hand on Brian's pant leg. Whatever bug Brian had, Pookie now surely had it as well. Pookie stared down at his partner. He wasn't going to leave Brian alone tonight, that was for sure. Besides, if someone was somehow putting thoughts into Brian's head, they sure weren't beaming them in with a magic wand. Had to be something in the apartment. While Brian slept, Pookie would tear the place apart. Brian's Sig Sauer was still in its shoulder holster. Pookie gently pulled the firearm free. Then he took the C-Camp wallet from Brian's back pocket. Best not to leave him with knives, either. Pookie pulled the combat knife from the forearm sheath, and finally gently removed the twitch knife from Brian's belt. Who wore a knife right next to their jimmy beans? Psycho killers, that's who. Pookie looked at the pile of weapons in his hands and couldn't help wondering if one of those knives might have cut open Oscar Woody's belly. 2 things sat on the nightstand next to Brian's bed. A small framed picture showing Brian, Robin, and her dog Emma, and a cheap spiral-bound notebook. The notebook was open to a drawing. A drawing of a triangle and a circle, with a smaller circle in the middle, a slashed curve beneath. Pookie walked into the kitchenette and set the arsenal on the small table. Brian just couldn't have done that horrible thing. Couldn't have. Pookie was playing games with people's lives. Brian Clouser was a goddamn suspect, yet Pookie was acting like his nursemaid. If only he could look deeper into Brian's soul. Maybe there was one person who could do just that. Brian's fridge held some leftover pizza, some leftover Chinese, half a leftover burrito, and one Sapporo. Pookie opened the beer, then leaned against the kitchen counter. He pulled out his phone and dialed. A sleepy voice answered.
"Hello?"
"Robin, Robin, Bo Bobbin, how are they hanging?"
A sigh, the rustle of covers, the soft clink of a metal tag on a dog's collar.
"Pookie, they don't hang. In fact, I don't even have they. It's late, and I'm exhausted. Are you okay?"
"Right as rain," he said. "I hear you're running the show at the ME office while Metz is out. Congrats, girl."
"Doesn't mean anything yet,"
she said.
"Just more work, but thanks. In the past 48 hours, I've talked to the mayor and Chief Sal. She called to tell me Verdi had the Oscar Woody case."
"He does," Pookie said. "Bless Verdi's black, black heart."
A pause.
"Why does he get it and not you guys?"
Pookie took a sip of beer.
"To be honest, Bo Bobbin, I'm not really sure. It's kind of... well, it's kind of weird."
"Yeah,"
she said.
Kind of weird on my end, too.
How so?
It's Verdi. I've worked with him before. He's usually okay.
He's an asshat.
Yes, but as far as asshats go, he's an okay asshat. You know what I mean. Anyway, he's not my favorite guy or anything, but he's fine to work with. Except for this case. He seems super intense. And it feels like he's rushing things.
Rushing things? Pookie hadn't realized it until now, but that's exactly how he felt about Chief Zhao's actions. She was trying to hurry the case along as fast as possible.
Bobov, and truth be told, I wasn't calling about Oscar Woody.
Then get to the point so I can get some sleep.
Pookie hesitated. If Brian found out about this call, he'd feel betrayed. Bros before hoes. Even though Robin Hudson was about as far from a hoe as one could get.
Robin, do you think Brian could ever hurt someone? Like, really bad. And not just in self-defense or doing his job.
Now she paused.
He never laid a hand on me.
Of course not,
Pookie said quickly, apologetically.
That's not what I mean. I'll just say that he's going through a tough time. And I really need the take of someone who's close to him.
Was close.
Pookie used a quick sip to hold back his laugh.
That's a good one, he said. If I say I believe that, will you also try to sell me a bridge? Come on, you guys are kidding yourselves.
Pookie, I don't need a lecture on...
Sorry, he said. Not trying to play matchmaker. Just, please, for me, answer the question. Do you think Brian is capable of a revenge attack? Or maybe even something... unprovoked.
He waited. The beer didn't taste like anything.
Yeah,
she said in a whisper.
Yeah, I do.
He'd known what her answer would be, because he'd already come to the same conclusion. But believing Brian was capable of it didn't mean that Brian had done it. Pookie would not turn his back on his friend.
Thanks, Bobobin.
You're welcome. Take care of him, Pookie.
I'm trying, darling, I'm trying. Night.
He hung up.
Please, God, don't let me be wrong about him.
Chapter 38 Mr. Sandman. This boy wasn't as stupid as the other one. This boy kept looking around, kept to the shadows, tried to stay out of sight. One womb. Brian looked down at the boy. He looked so tiny, like a little mouse. From this high above, everyone seemed small. The boy had a thin red goatee. He wore a crimson jacket with gold trim. A white sweatshirt hood was up over a crimson ball cap, sporting the gold initials BC. The colors marked him. Marked him as a tormentor, as a torturer. The colors marked him for death. Brian felt that heat. That flush of stronger-than-life passion for the hunt. This boy was already on the run. He knew someone was out to get him. That would make him more dangerous prey. The boy looked up, but not at Brian. The boy turned his head this way and that, looking at every window, every doorway, even up to every rooftop, his head moving steady and smooth and non-stop. This boy knew his surroundings. He knew his turf.
The whole city is our turf, asshole.
Brian stayed very still. He let the prey waste its energy. Brian's soul tingled. His mind swam with the knowledge that this was the way life was meant to be lived. He'd been born for this. The boy walked west on Geary. He crossed Hyde, heading toward Larkin. Brian moved back, like a shadow, out of sight from anyone on the street. Clutching his blanket tied around his body, he jumped, a silent wind, moving from the roof of a parking garage to the tarred flat top of the Hara Bar. There Brian paused, freezing in place. He scanned the rooftop, the other buildings, looking for any sign of movement, any sign of the monster. He saw none, and that made him happy. With the barest of movements, Brian leaned out over the brickwork to look down to the street 20 feet below. Prey spotted.
One womb, you motherfucking bully.
There were very few people on the streets, but still enough to make it difficult. The boy wasn't far from Van Ness. Even in the pre-dawn hours, that road had enough traffic that you couldn't just grab prey and drag it into the shadows, or pull it up onto the roofs. If the boy reached Van Ness, they'd have no choice but to wait and watch.
"He's a smart one,"
said the sandpapery voice to Brian's right.
"You got that right, Fly,"
Brian said. Brian turned and saw a nightmare. A thick man with a heavy, dark blanket draped over his head and shoulders. The blanket covered him, but not all of him. A green face with a pointy snout caught the dim light. Yellow eyes narrow with anticipation. The thick man smiled, revealing razor-sharp, neon-white teeth. The nightmare spoke.
"This one is going to taste sweet."
Brian woke up, screaming. He was going to kill that boy. No. No, not him. That monster. Blood pounding, adrenaline surging, his cock as hard as a railroad spike. Every ounce of him ached. Invisible jackhammers pounding away at his flesh. Even his bones hurt. His bedroom door flew open. Pookie slid in, gun in hand, eyes darting first to Brian, then around the room. Pookie knelt to look under the bed. Brian shook his head.
"No one here. A dream."
Pookie stood. He looked scared. Scared of Brian. Maybe he should be.
"A dream," Pookie said. "Like the last one?"
Brian coughed, nodded. So hot. He'd never felt this sick. Felt like something was attacking every ounce of his body.
"Yeah, like the last one. I think it's happening again."
Pookie stared, blinked.
"You're telling me that someone's being murdered, right now? That you dreamed it?"
Brian pushed his body out of bed. Heavy feet, still in his shoes, landed on the floor with a thump.
"Not yet," he said. "Stalking him."
"Who is stalking him?"
"I am. I mean, someone is. And I think I was in that someone's head. Something like that, anyway."
Pookie's face showed he was having a hard time believing this.
"You're telling me someone is stalking this kid right this second?"
Brian rubbed his eyes, tried to breathe through his aching lungs, tried to think.
"They're going to take him down. He's at Geary and Hyde. We gotta go."
"I'll call it in," Pookie said. "You're not going anywhere."
Brian's hands drifted to his shoulder holster, empty.
"I need my weapon."
"I'd rather you went without."
Pookie didn't trust Brian with a gun. Considering what Brian had put him through, that was probably smart. But Brian didn't have time to argue.
"Brian, forget it. You're in no shape to..."
"No time,"
Brian said as he brushed past Pookie and stepped into the hall. He found his weapons piled up on the kitchen table, put them where they belonged. He turned back toward the front door to leave the apartment and found Pookie blocking his way. Pookie's gun was in his right hand, the barrel pointed at the ground.
"Brian, I can't let you go."
Brian paused. His own partner had drawn on him. He didn't feel offended or insulted. Instead, he actually felt instant sympathy for Pookie's difficult position. But there just wasn't time for this.
"Pooks, I will not let that boy die. Call for backup. Come with me or stay here, but whatever you do, get the fuck out of my way."
Pookie's hand flexed on his Sig Sauer. Was he going to point it at Brian? Had it come to that? Brian turned and ran into his tiny kitchen. A second later, he heard footsteps behind him as Pookie reacted. The narrow kitchen window was hinged on the left side. It swung open like a door that led to the fire escape. Brian stepped out the window to the metal grate platform outside, the night welcoming him back to its dark embrace. It had rained while he slept. The metal rails felt icy cold on his hands. Before Pookie had even reached the kitchen, Brian had slid down to the third floor and was already descending to the second. By the time Pookie crawled out of the kitchen window, Brian's feet hit the first floor landing and slipped. His feet shot out from under him. The fire escape's wet, rusty metal smashed into his forehead. That pain added to his aches and fever, but he didn't let it stop him. He got back to his feet. Instead of lowering the collapsible ladder to the sidewalk, he just hopped over the rail.
Brian, stay there!
Brian's feet hit concrete. He ignored his partner. The kid from his dream was going to wind up just like Oscar Woody. Brian had to stop that from happening. He felt blood sheeting down his face. His Nike slapped lightly against wet sidewalk as he sprinted toward Van Ness Avenue. Brian ran south on Van Ness, the six lanes of sporadic 3 a.m. traffic moving along on his right. What few pedestrians there were got the hell out of his way. A black-clad sprinting man with a Sig Sauer in his hand and blood streaming from his forehead didn't exactly court conversation. Despite his pain, his legs worked just fine. Long, loping steps threw him along. Everything whipped by so fast. As soon as this was over, he'd puke his guts out, he promised himself. But for now, he had to ignore everything and get to that kid. Brian planted at Geary and turned left, momentum actually curving him off the sidewalk and into the road before he corrected. He heard sirens approaching, probably patrol cars already responding to Pookie's call. The sound echoed through the nighttime city canyons. Brian didn't know where to go, so he kept running. He crossed Polk Street, dodging a car as he moved from sidewalk to blacktop, then sidewalk again. Building walls shot by on his left, parked cars on his right. Movement from above. A burning body sailing off a rooftop 4 stories above. It blazed orange against the black night sky, a flailing comet trailing a tongue of fire that smashed into a white van, deeply denting the roof. Another flash of motion from up there. But whatever it was,
Snakeman
slipped out of sight behind the roof's edge. Brian ran to the van and jumped. He found himself on top of the deeply dented, smashed-in roof. The man was face down, small flames licking at his blackened clothes. Brian whipped off his jacket and covered him, patting him down, snuffing out the flames. The man moaned.
Hold on, buddy. I got you.
The sirens grew louder. Brian realized the man's jacket, where it wasn't blackened and melted, was crimson and gold. Boyko gear. It wasn't a man. It was a boy. The boy from his dream. Hurt, but not dead. Brian pulled out his cell and hit the two-way button.
Pookie, you there?
I'm here.
He sounded out of breath.
I'm a block and a half away. I see you.
Brian looked down Geary. He saw Pookie running toward him.
Get an ambulance.
Brian slid the phone back in his pocket. Streetlights reflected off of the blood slowly pooling around the wounded kid, wet red smearing the van's white paint.
Just take it easy, Brian said. I'm a cop. Help is on the way.
He didn't want to move the boy, but broken bones or an injured spinal column didn't matter if Brian couldn't find the wound and stop the bleeding.
I'm going to roll you over. I'll do it slow, but it'll hurt. Did someone throw you off the roof?
Jumped,
the boy said, his words muffled because his face rested against the van roof.
Had to get away.
Get away from who?
Devil,
the boy said.
Dragon.
Brian rolled the boy over. Wide, frightened eyes stared out from a face covered with third-degree burns. Swollen blisters, some shiny white, some raw red, clustered on his cheeks, his nose, his mouth, his forehead, on almost every bit of exposed skin. His eyebrows and eyelids were gone, as was most of the hair at his temples and on top of his head. Blackened clothes, the jacket and what looked like a football jersey, had melted onto him. A small but steady pulsing of blood bubbled up from the boy's abdomen. Brian moved in to apply pressure, but something on the boy's face froze him in place. A bit of red hair on the boy's lip, a bit more on his chin, the remnants of a scraggly goatee. Most of it had burned away, but enough remained for Brian to see the blistered face anew. A small part of him knew this was Jay Pilar. A bigger part of him, the part that took over, it recognized something else entirely. That part recognized the prey from his dream.
One womb, motherfucker.
A wave of hatred instantly bubbled up and boiled over into blinding, murderous rage. Brian stood and straddled the kid, his feet balancing on the dented, blood-streaked white metal. He reached to his shoulder holster, pulled his pistol, then pointed the barrel right between the boy's eyes. A charred hand rose up, palm out, as if flesh and bone would stop a bullet.
"You're a bully," Brian said. "I'm going to kill you."
The boy's oozing lips struggled to form words.
"Please, no."
He didn't even have the energy to fight for his life. Brian thumbed back the P-226's hammer until it clicked.
"Long live the king, asshole."
The boy's eyes widened.
"That's what the devil said."
Brian leaned in. He rested the muzzle against the boy's forehead. The boy squeezed his eyes tight.
"Brian, put it down, now!"
Pookie's voice. Pookie's screaming voice. Brian blinked, looked down to the sidewalk. Pookie, his chest heaving, his gun drawn, his feet spread in a shooter's stance.
"Why the hell is my partner aiming at me?"
"Drop it, Brian! Drop it right fucking now or I will put you down!"
Brian's rage evaporated into the cool night air. There was something in his hands. He looked. He was holding his gun, pressing the barrel against the forehead of a badly wounded 16-year-old boy. Brian decocked the Sig Sauer, then slowly slid the weapon into his shoulder holster. The gun's muzzle left an indented ring on the scorched, blistered forehead. The last of the boy's energy seemed to fade away like a long, final breath. He closed his eyes. He didn't move. Pookie scrambled onto the van's hood, then up onto the now crowded roof. The boy's abdomen no longer pulsed blood. Pookie grabbed the boy's wrist, feeling for a pulse.
"Nothing! Shit!"
He looked up at Brian.
"What the fuck were you doing, man?"
Brian didn't answer. Pookie turned back to the boy. Left palm on the back of his right hand, Pookie started chest compressions. Brian's gaze drifted toward the buildings on the other side of Geary Street, at heads and bodies silhouetted in lit-up apartment windows. People were watching. As Pookie pumped, he again looked at Brian.
"Were you going to kill this kid?"
Brian blinked a few times, trying to collect his thoughts. Then the impact of Pookie's words hit home.
"No," Brian said. "He fell. He was on fire. I put out the flames. I didn't touch him."
Pookie's hands kept pumping.
"Didn't touch him except for putting your fucking gun against his forehead, right? And I saw you. I saw you jump up on this van. 8 feet up and you landed standing? How the hell did you do that?"
What the fuck was Pookie talking about? Brian couldn't do that. No one could. The fever swept over him again, hotter than before, as if it was furious at being ignored and wanted payback. The aches pinched his joints, his muscles. His face felt wet and sticky. He touched his fingertips to his forehead. They came back covered in blood. Pookie kept pumping, his arms straight, his hands on the boy's sternum. He stopped to press his fingers against the boy's neck. Brian waited, hoping Pookie would feel something there, but Pookie's shaking head told him otherwise.
"Still no pulse."
Pookie returned to chest compressions. The oncoming siren screamed louder. Couldn't be long now. Brian watched Pookie try to save the boy. Maybe this was still the dream. Maybe if Brian had given first aid right away instead of putting a gun in the boy's face, the boy would still be alive.
"Brian, get off the van!"
Pookie said. Red and blue lights cut the night as patrol cars turned onto Geary. Brian looked down at the boy again, horribly burned, young body smashed from a 4-story fall. If Brian hadn't dreamed about the kid, would this have happened? All that rage, all that hate. How could he feel that for someone he'd never even met?
Brian! Pookie's yell yanked Brian back into the moment. Get down, his partner said. Let me handle this. You keep your mouth shut. Let me do the talking. Got it?
Brian nodded. He slid off the van. Next thing he knew, he was sitting with his ass on the concrete sidewalk, his back against the building from which a flaming Jay Parlar had fallen to his death. Up on the van roof, Pookie kept pumping away on the boy's chest. Pulse or no pulse, he would continue to do that until the paramedics arrived. Brian closed his eyes. This was what it felt like to go insane. Chapter 39. Alex Panos Gets Gone. A half block east of the ruined van, two teenage boys stood at the corner of Geary and Larkin, their heads peeking around just enough to watch the scene. Four police cars, an ambulance, and cops all over the place. One of the boys was much bigger than the other. The smaller one wore a black sweatshirt, hood pulled up over his head. His name was Isaac Moses. The other boy wore a crimson jacket with gold sleeves and a gold BC on the chest. His name was Alex Panos, and he wanted to know just what the hell was going on.
Holy shit, Isaac said. Alex, that cop, I thought he was going to shoot Jay.
Alex nodded. I recognize those pigs. The one in black is Brian Clauser. The fat one is Pookie something or other. They were at my house.
At your house? Holy shit, man, holy shit, what are we going to do?
Alex didn't know. He glanced at his friend's plain black sweatshirt. Isaac thought someone wanted to kill anyone wearing Boyko colors, so he didn't wear them. Alex had called Isaac a pussy for that. But after seeing what happened to Jay, maybe it was a good idea to lose the Boston College gear after all.
Alex, man, I'm scared, Isaac said. Maybe we should go to the cops.
Dumb shit, those are cops.
Yeah, but you said they were in your house, and they didn't try anything, right? And that cop in black, he didn't actually shoot Jay. Besides, both cops were on the ground. They didn't set Jay on fire and throw him off the fucking roof of his own building, right?
Alex looked back down the street. One of the cops that had visited his apartment, the one that dressed all in black, was in the back of the ambulance. A paramedic was working on his face. The other one, the fat chink, he was also around somewhere, but Alex didn't see him. Jay was still on the van roof. It didn't look like he was moving. A second paramedic was up there with him, but he didn't seem to be in much of a hurry.
I think Jay's dead, Alex said.
Isaac's face wrinkled. His blue eyes narrowed and started to tear up.
Dead? Jay? Holy shit, man!
Be quiet, Alex said. I gotta think.
Isaac was right about one thing. The cop hadn't actually shot Jay. But maybe that was only because Jay was already dying from the fall. If Alex and Isaac had been just a couple of minutes earlier, would they be dead as well? What really mattered was that those two cops had come to Jay's place at 3 in the morning, and now Jay was dead. Isaac tugged at Alex's sleeve.
Alex, come on, Isaac said. Let's go to the cops. Other cops, I mean. We're in a lot of fucking trouble.
Alex shook his head.
No way. Whatever cop we talk with, those two are going to know, and then they'll come for us. Cops stick with cops. They don't give a shit about the law or justice or whatever. We have to find a place to hide for a while. That, and we have to find guns.
Alex ducked back behind the building, out of sight of the cops swarming around Geary Street. He started walking north on Larkin, then stopped, reached back, grabbed Isaac and dragged him away from the corner. Chapter 40. Another day, another body. Pookie went through the motions. Part of his brain paid close attention to details. Another part directed the other cops, sending uniforms where they needed to go to collect information. And yet another part was lost in the bizarreness of his partner, of what this all meant. Pookie was overweight, out of shape, and slow, but he wasn't that slow. He'd been maybe 2 blocks behind Brian. Pookie had turned the corner just in time to see Jay Pilar's flaming body sail into the night air. Brian was down on the sidewalk when the kid's body smashed into the van. No way Brian could have thrown the kid off that roof. Pookie had closed in, his chest burning, his stomach heaving. He really had to do something about getting back into shape. And then, Brian's crazy leap. To leap that high, maybe Brian had jumped up, then pushed off the side of the van or the van's door handle, like those parkour guys who could run up the side of a building. Brian had been far away. It had been dark, save for the streetlights. The boy had been on fire. Plenty of variables to play tricks with what Pookie had seen. Because a man couldn't jump 8 feet straight up. Brian's feet had cleared the van roof. He had dropped down lightly, one black Nike on either side of the face-down burning kid. Brian had whipped off his jacket and used it to smother the flames. He'd been helping the boy. But when Brian had rolled the kid over, everything changed. Pookie knew. He knew that if he hadn't gotten there when he had, Brian would have put a bullet through Jay Parlar's brain. The crime scene investigations team was already finished with their work. According to them, Jay would have died even if he hadn't been set on fire and tossed off a four-story building. The boy had been stabbed while still up on the roof, severing an artery. He never had a chance. When the morgue van took the body away, Pookie had gone up to the roof to see things for himself. There he'd found symbols written in Jay Parlar's blood. The same symbols they'd found written in Oscar Woody's blood. Back down on the street, Pookie found Brian sitting in the back of an ambulance, a paramedic examining his head. He looked dazed. No one gave that a second thought, though. The other cops automatically wrote it off as a natural reaction to seeing a burning kid thrown off a building. Pookie scratched the stubble on his cheek as he stared at his partner. He tried hard to rationalize all of this crap, tried to come up with a normal explanation, but it was time to accept what he'd witnessed with his own eyes. The dreams were for real. It was no trick, no gimmick. Was Brian psychic? Pookie wasn't ready to believe that just yet, but after tonight he couldn't rule it out. He'd been in Brian's apartment when Brian dreamed about Jay Parlar. No evildoer had slipped in and whispered in Brian's ear. There were no microphones in the wall, no electrodes in the pillow. Brian had dreamed a kid was in danger. Then he'd shot out of the apartment, tried to save that kid just as any cop would do. An abnormal method of discovery, but a normal reaction. As fucked up as it was, Pookie felt infinitely better. Brian had not killed Jay Parlar. If he hadn't killed Jay, then he probably hadn't killed Oscar Woody. Probably. Brian had no alibi for Oscar. He could have killed Oscar and someone else could have killed Jay. Which would mean what? That Brian had accomplices? That maybe he was working with other killers? Even if that was true, why would he murder those kids? Pookie spent at least 50 hours a week with Brian. Before last night, Brian clearly hadn't known a thing about Oscar Woody or Jay Parlar or Boyko. There was no motive. Fuck. None of this made any sense. Patrol officers were already in buildings on both sides of the street, knocking on apartment doors, looking for witnesses. Pookie didn't have any hope of finding someone who had been up at 3 a.m. and had seen the deal go down. There were no witnesses. Wait, that wasn't right. There was one person who had seen Jay Parlar up on that roof. Brian had, in his dreams. Pookie walked to the ambulance. The paramedic was just finishing up, wiping down the cut on Brian's forehead. Brian's black clothes helped hide the fact that he'd bled like a stuck pig, even left a trail of droplets all the way from his apartment to here. Pookie leaned in and looked at the sutured wound.
Hey, is that just 3 stitches?
The paramedic nodded.
Yeah, not too bad. 3 stitches for all that blood? Brian, what are you, a hemophiliac?
Brian shrugged.
I asked him the same thing, the paramedic said. Seemed like a lot of blood, but it appears to be clotting normally. No problems. Maybe it was from sprinting here. I'm not sure. Scalp wounds always bleed like hell, though. He's fine.
Thanks, Pookie said.
Can you give us a minute?
The paramedic nodded and walked off. Pookie sat next to his partner in the back of the ambulance.
Bri-Bri, you good?
Brian shook his head.
Far from it. Panos and Moses are next if they're not dead already. You put out a call to have them picked up?
Pookie nodded.
Ballpuller Boyd already tried the Panos place, but Alex wasn't home. Susie doesn't know where he is.
Shocker,
Brian said.
I know, right? A patrol car is at Isaac Moses' place, but he's also nowhere to be seen. I called a bolo for both of them.
Brian nodded and seemed to relax. The call to be on the lookout went out not only department-wide, but across the Bay Area. Someone would find those kids and bring them in. Pookie took in a slow breath. He had to ask the hard question. Asking it somehow made all of this real, and he wished to God it wasn't real, but he couldn't beat around the bush any longer.
Okay, Brian, spill it. Tell me what you saw.
Brian pointed out the ambulance's open back doors toward the ruined white van.
I turned the corner, started running down Geary, and...
No! Not that what you saw. In the dream. Tell me what you saw in the dream.
Brian looked down. Not at Pookie. Not at the floor. Just down. When he spoke, it was in little more than a whisper.
I saw Pilar. He was walking. It was like I was looking down from above. Like I was tracking him. Stalking him.
From above?
Pookie said.
Maybe four stories above?
Brian looked at Pookie, then up to the apartment building's roof. He nodded, understanding.
Yeah, maybe four stories above. Only it wasn't me that saw him. It was, and it wasn't. I was on the roof with this other guy.
What did the other guy look like?
Brian paused.
I don't remember.
Bri, you lie about as well as I do when I tell a woman I'll call her in the morning. Start talking.
Brian reached up, his fingertips lightly touching the three tiny black stitches.
You'll think I'm crazy.
Dude, I'm already positive you're crazy, so tell me what the guy looked like.
Brian looked down again.
He had a blanket over his shoulders, his head. From what I could make out, he looked like a snake.
What, you mean shifty? Like those fucking Italians?
He shook his head.
No, I mean like a snake. Green skin and a pointy nose.
Pookie stared at Brian. Brian continued to stare at the ground.
Green skin, Pookie said. Pointy nose.
Brian nodded. Pookie didn't want to laugh, but he couldn't stop a small one from slipping out.
Huh. Man, I'd love to see the lineup if we catch this guy. Well, number three step forward. No, not the werewolf, the snake man.
It was just a dream, okay? It's not like I saw a snake man in real life.
Okay, okay,
Pookie said. Brian was taking this hard. Who wouldn't? But Pookie still had to treat him like any other witness. Walk him through the situation, rephrase questions and ask again, and so on.
So what do you think is going on, Terminator? Did you know these boys?
No.
Before we found Oscar Woody, had you ever heard of the boys' company?
No.
Then how did you know someone was trying to kill Jay Pilar?
Brian sighed. He probably wanted to believe all of this even less than Pookie did.
I already told you, Pooks. In my dream, I was stalking him. I wanted to kill him, just like I wanted to kill Oscar in that first dream, although I didn't know who Oscar Woody was at the time.
Pookie closed his eyes and rubbed his face. He had to start making the smart decisions. Brian hadn't killed Jay Pilar, fine, but there was no longer any question that, somehow, he was involved in these murders. Partner or no partner, he belonged in interrogation, getting grilled like any other suspect in a murder case. But Pookie just couldn't do that to his friend. There had to be another angle here.
Bri, you said there were others with you in the Jay Pilar dream. You said the same thing about Oscar Woody's dream, right?
Brian nodded.
So do you think you could describe them to a sketch artist?
Brian thought for a second, then shook his head.
No, I don't think so. I can't really visualize them, you know. It was just a hodgepodge of messed up features.
A young uniformed officer approached. Pookie slid out of the ambulance to meet him.
Officer Stuart Hood, good to see you. Your mom won that cook-off last month.
Took second, Hood said.
I'll tell her you asked. Ah, she got robbed. You tell Rebecca she should have won the blue ribbon. And tell her to make me some more of those hazelnut cookies you brought in. Like little slices I have in those things.
Hood smiled. I'll tell her.
Turns out we have a woman who saw something suspicious, Inspector. Tiffany Hines, 67 years old. A witness at 3 a.m. in this part of town. Nice work, Officer Hood. I'm surprised you didn't find a ring-tailed lemur first.
Hood smiled, laughed a little.
I wouldn't get too excited, Inspector. Oh, you think this is a funny situation?
Pookie said.
This is high comedy to you.
If I'm sad and melancholy, is he going to suddenly spring back to life?
Melancholy, that's a big word for you, isn't it? Just tell me what Hines said.
Hood bit his lip, trying to hide a smile.
She said she saw a werewolf take the boy.
The last thing Pookie needed right now was a stand-up comic moonlighting as a cop.
Officer Hood, I'm really not in the mood for jokes, you get me?
Hood shrugged.
I'm not joking, that's what she said. She said a werewolf. Well, she said the guy had a dog face anyway. That sounds like a werewolf to me. But Wolfie wasn't alone, he had a partner.
Hood's chest jiggled from a suppressed laugh.
She said it was a guy with a snake face.
Pookie looked at Brian, then back to Hood.
A snake face. You sure?
Hood nodded. He coughed, still trying to cover up his laughter.
Inspector Verdi is en route. He said the case is his because of the symbols on the roof. He's coming to take over the scene. Should I give him this crazy... Excuse me, I mean this valuable witness?
Polyester Rich. As soon as he arrived, Pookie and Brian would be locked out of the case. If Pookie wanted answers, he had to get them now.
What's Verdi's ETA?
He said 15 minutes. We'll take the witness, Pookie said. Where is she?
Hood pointed to the green apartment building across the street from the white van where Jay had died.
Apartment 215,
he said, then walked away. Brian stepped out of the ambulance.
We have a witness that saw a snake face.
Pookie nodded.
So it seems.
That old excitement flashed in Brian's eyes, but only for a second. He looked down again.
Look, man, I don't know what's going on, but I'm putting you in a really shitty spot. So here's your out. If you say the word, I'll go downtown and turn myself in. I'll tell the chief all about my dreams and let her figure out what to do next. You want me to do that?
It shocked Pookie how badly he wanted to say yes. Shocked him and filled him with guilt. Brian Clouser had saved his life. They were partners. They were friends. And God help him, Pookie just flat out believed that Brian Clouser was innocent. He looked to the green building across the street. Could the witness in there somehow validate what Brian had seen in his dreams?
Come on, Pookie said. I have to talk to this woman. You're my partner, so you get to tag along.
Brian looked up, looked Pookie in the eyes. He nodded. They both knew that Pookie was putting his career on the line.
Thanks, Brian said. I mean it. Thanks.
Don't thank me yet, Terminator. Maybe you and this Tiffany Hine both wind up in a straitjacket before sunrise. Polyester Rich will be here soon, so let's make this quick. Who knows? You might actually get your monstery lineup after all.
Chapter 41.
The only thing we have to fear is...
He had a flashlight pinned under his right armpit, its oblong of illumination dancing madly off a drawing of Jay Perlar taking a fire axe to the stomach. The beam danced because of what Rex was doing with his left hand. It was bad. It was unclean, but he couldn't stop. His cast-clad right hand rested on the edge of his desk, the only thing stopping him from falling down.
Rex's left hand did the nasty thing. Even though he'd never done it before, he knew it felt wrong. He was right-handed.
Come on. Come on.
He'd woken up all wet, his blanket soaked with sweat, his breath ragged and his heart beating so loud he heard it. The dream. It had been so real. He'd watched Jay Parlard die. And that had made his dick hard. So painfully hard. Naughty. Awful. Bad. Dreaming it was shameful. But now he was making it worse.
Just stop it, Rex. Just stop it.
But he could not. The fingers of his right hand curled tight against the cast across his palm. He couldn't think.
Come on. Come on.
Couldn't think.
Come on. Come on. Come on.
The flashlight dropped to the floor. He grabbed at his right hand, pulled, tore, smashed his right arm into his desk, making a big bang, then pulling and tearing again. And then,
it feels so good. Come on, come on, come on.
The flashlight no longer lit up the desk, but that didn't matter. He saw his drawing in his mind, a pencil sketch of Jay Parlar, eyes wide and wet, snot hanging from his nose. Mouth open and pleading for his life.
Die, you bully! I will kill you! I will... Come on, come on, come on, come on! Hate you,
Rex said. Then his breath locked up in his throat, and his thoughts faded away. All sensations vanished, all but the sound of Jay Parlar's final scream. Rex's knees buckled. He caught the edge of the desk to stop from falling. Sweat dripped down his forehead. He picked up the flashlight and pointed the beam at his drawing. Oh, no. He jizzed right on the picture of Jay Pilar's pleading, terrified face. What did that mean? Rex felt tears well up. What was wrong with him? Why did he have to do the thing that Roberta told him was bad, that she said was sinful and dirty? His right arm tingled with cool dampness. Rex held his right hand in front of the flashlight beam. The cast was gone. The skin on his arm goosebumped, still tacky with sweat that had built up inside the plaster. He pointed the flashlight at the door. The cracked, floppy ruin of his cast lay on the carpet. He looked at his right arm again. He made a slow fist. The spot where Alex had stomped, it looked fine. It didn't feel broken anymore. The doctor had said he'd be in the cast for weeks. The doctor had said that the day before yesterday. Rex suddenly realized that the aches he'd suffered for days, his pains, his fever, all of it was gone. Gone. But that didn't matter right now. He had to clean up before Roberta saw what he'd done. Just leaving his bed unmade got 3 hits with a belt. How bad would she beat him if she saw he'd been jacking off? He'd get the paddle for sure. He was in trouble. So much trouble. The pieces of his cast went into the trash. He could dump that tomorrow while Roberta watched the morning news. He grabbed tissues from a box of Kleenex and wiped at the picture. Some of the pencil lines blurred, smudged. Would Roberta know? Probably not. She never looked at his pictures anyway. And that cast had been expensive. Roberta would freak out that he'd ruined it. Rex looked around his room. Nothing really seemed out of place. Sometimes she went days without coming in here at all. Sometimes he slept in the park and didn't even come home. Once he'd been gone for 2 nights in a row, and she hadn't even noticed. Maybe he could do that again. Go hide in the park or something. Maybe in a few days he could tell her the cast just fell off. Rex wiped snot away from his nose. He crawled into bed and pulled the blankets tight around him. He shouldn't have done that nasty thing. But now he felt better. He'd gotten it out of his system. Imagining Oscar's murder, jizzing to it. That was a one-time thing. It was bad, but he would never do it again. Never. But still, what if Roberta found out? Rex's breath suddenly stopped. He stared at the ceiling without really seeing it. A thought, so new, so shocking, so revolutionary, had flashed through his head, grabbed him and wouldn't let go. What if Roberta found out? No. So what if Roberta found out? So what? Father Paul Maloney, Oscar Woody. Both of them had hurt Rex. Rex had drawn them, and now they were dead. Roberta hurt Rex all the time. He could draw her, too. Maybe Rex didn't need to be afraid anymore. And tonight, he'd drawn Jay Perlar. Would Jay still be alive tomorrow? Rex closed his eyes, a smile on his lips as he fell asleep. Chapter 42. Brian lets Pookie do the talking. 67-year-old Tiffany Hine didn't look a day over 66 and a half. Brian thought her apartment smelled exactly the way you'd think an old lady's apartment smelled. Stale violets, baby powder, and medicine. She had a high, soft voice and frizzy silver hair long past a glorious prime. She wore a yellow-flowered robe and worn pink slippers. Her eyes looked clear and focused, the kind of eyes that could see right through the bullshit of any child, or grandchild for that matter. Those eyes sported deep laugh lines. At the moment, the lines on her face showed real fear. She was old, but she looked sharp. She looked sane, and that was what Brian desperately needed to believe. Pookie and Tiffany sat next to each other on a plastic-covered couch. Brian stood by, looking out the living room window to Gary Street below, and across the street, to the van where Jay Perlar had died. Brian's sour stomach threatened to twist him in knots. His head swam so bad he had to keep a hand on the wall to stop from swaying. It was usually best to let Pookie do the talking. Now it was a necessity.
"Just take it from the beginning, ma'am," Pookie said. "I already told the other man, the one with the uniform,"
Tiffany said.
"You don't have a uniform. And I might add it's time for you to get a new jacket, young man. The one you're wearing probably stopped fitting you 20 pounds ago."
Pookie smiled.
"I'm a homicide inspector, ma'am. We don't wear uniforms. But I still eat lots of donuts, as you can tell."
She smiled. It was a genuine smile, although half-hearted and a bit empty. What she had seen affected her to the core.
"Fine. I'll tell you, but this is the last time."
Pookie nodded.
"As you can see, my window looks out on Geary. I look out on the street a lot. I like to watch people go by and imagine what their stories are."
Outside the window, morning sunlight was just beginning to hit the blacktop. This woman had really been staring out the window at such a convenient time. Brian wanted Pookie to get to the point, get to the part with the snake face, but Pookie had his own way of doing things, and Brian had to be patient.
"At 3 in the morning, Pookie said. "Kind of late for people watching, isn't it?" "I don't sleep well," Tiffany said. "Thoughts of mortality, you see. Of how everything is just going to end. Don't worry, young man. If you aren't thinking about it already, you will soon enough."
Pookie nodded.
"Thoughts of mortality come with my job. Please continue."
Tiffany did.
"So I'm looking out the window, and I see this young man across the street, wearing a crimson jacket. I've seen him before. He and 3 other boys wander the streets at all hours. I recognize them because they all wear the same colors, crimson, white, and gold. But tonight it was just the one boy."
Pookie made a few notes on his pad.
"The boy was walking fast," Tiffany said. "That's what caught my attention. He kept looking behind him like he thought someone was following him, perhaps. Then the bums dropped down."
Brian turned away from the window. "Dropped down?"
"Dropped down?"
Pookie said, echoing Brian's thoughts.
"You said bums dropped down. Dropped down from where?"
Tiffany shrugged.
"From the roof of that apartment building across the street, I imagine. It was like they fell from windowsill to windowsill, but not an accident, on purpose."
"I see," Pookie said.
"And you got a good look at them?"
She shrugged again.
As good as I could, considering the light and how fast they moved. They dropped down, grabbed him, then went up again.
Pookie scribbled.
And how did they go up? Fire escape?
She shook her head and stared off to some spot in the room.
They went up the same way they came down, window to window. I've never seen people jump that high. It wasn't as if they stuck to the walls like Spider-Man, mind you. It was more like watching a squirrel scramble up an oak tree. They went up four stories so fast I couldn't believe it.
Brian looked to the building across the street and tried to visualize what she had seen. Even if someone could climb from windowsill to windowsill, some acrobat or whatever, no one could climb those four stories with any kind of speed. Pookie nodded and wrote, as if hearing about someone scrambling up the side of a building were an everyday occurrence.
That's fine, he said. And could you describe the men, please?
Tiffany cleared her throat again.
They were big. Maybe a foot taller than the boy, maybe even more. They both had these dirty blankets draped over their shoulders.
You called them bums, Pookie said.
That was my first reaction,
Tiffany said.
I mean, if I saw those men on the street all bundled up like that, I probably wouldn't even notice them. You see people like that all the time, the poor souls. But these men, well, the blankets seemed to loosen up, maybe. The blankets slid away from their faces a little.
She stared off to a corner of the room. She continued in a barely audible whisper.
That's when I saw the one with green skin and a pointy face, like a snake. The other one.
Tiffany mimed pulling at her nose, pulling it out a foot from her face.
Had a long snoot, and it looked like he had brown hair all over it. I also saw he had brown legs covered in hair the same as his face.
Brian breathed slowly. Dirty blankets, just like in his dream, and brown hair, like the brown hair Sammy Berzon had found on the blanket covering Oscar Woody's corpse. If she had actually seen this, then maybe he wasn't crazy after all.
Oh,
she said.
There was one more thing. The one with the brown legs was wearing Bermuda shorts.
Bermuda shorts,
Pookie said, writing it down in his notebook.
The one that looked like a werewolf was wearing Bermuda shorts.
Tiffany tilted her head and narrowed her eyes.
I never said werewolf. I only got a glimpse when he grabbed the boy, when the blanket loosened up a little. The big snoot, it was like a dog's, but the jaws didn't line up right. He had a tongue that hung off one side. People.
She stopped, looked down to her carpet, the fear now totally in control of her face and voice.
People don't look like that.
Then what happened?
She licked her lips. Her hands were shaking.
Then I didn't see anything for a bit. Then there was this fireball from up on the roof. I saw the boy engulfed in it.
Did you see what caused the fireball?
She shook her head.
No, it was too bright. I only saw the boy because he was silhouetted. Then he was burning. There were others on the roof in the blankets. The boy, he was still on fire and he jumped. Whatever was up there with him, he chose to kill himself rather than face it.
Pookie lowered the notepad.
Ma'am, this has been very helpful. Would you mind if a sketch artist came over?
She shook her head violently, instantly.
As soon as you boys leave, I'm not talking about this again, ever.
But this could be helpful to our...
Leave,
she said.
I did my part.
The front door opened, and they all turned to look. No knock, no buzzer, just Rich Verdi storming in, resplendent in a dark purple suit. Where the hell did that guy shop? Behind Verdi walked Bobby Pigeon, and behind Bobby came Officer Stuart Hood. Hood had a look on his face like he'd just been reamed out good and proper. Chang!